You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Fantasy Sports Today back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. And for those of you listening to us on TuneIn and iHeartRadio and a variety of terrestrial radio stations across the country, thank you. Thanks for finding us on this Saturday morning. Talking some NFL this hour. We're going to have Rich Sermonello coming up at in 20 minutes or so. He's going to talk to us about some of the NFL prospects coming up in this draft. I've done shows with Rich after the combine. We're going to have some draft content coming up here in the next couple of weeks. He and Joe Lisi of College Football Today do an excellent job of breaking down draft prospects, and we've talked so much about the quarterbacks, I think it was a good idea to maybe switch it over to the defensive side of the ball, because we're probably going to talk about the quarterbacks right now in a moment. But first, you know, Kevin, we've gotten through a lot of the free agency, although guys still continue to get signed. You know, lower level guys, like we saw Frank Gore is going back to Miami, and amazing, right? Frank Gore, like, just the consistency with which he's been able to produce is amazing. So you're still seeing guys get signed like that. Allen Hurns ends up at the Cowboys. So maybe less relevant fantasy players than some of those bigger signings, but nonetheless, still relevant. Like, how many touches does Frank Gore get? How many balls can Allen Hurns get thrown at him? Like, part of the problem with the Cowboys passing offense is that, you know, Dez is in some decline, and I don't know that Terrence Williams and Cole Beasley are really getting it done for them. So can Allen Hurns come in there and secure a role that maybe he supplants somebody like Terrence Williams? Is that possible?
It's going to be interesting to see how they fit Allen Hurns in. I don't know. It just, I feel like they're now going to kind of just have a collection of guys where, I mean, Dez is going to still clearly be, I think, the first one that you draft, and I get, you know, Allen Hurns will be the second one. Like, you'll know somewhat of an order, but as far as the ability to really rely, I guess, on these guys on a week-to-week basis, I still don't know if there's going to be anyone really in the passing game that would fit that build.
So there's also another article I'm looking at right now, Todd Archer from ESPN. He's saying that these recent signings are really starting to put some heat on Dez Bryant. Now, nobody's suggesting that Allen Hurns is going to be the next Dez Bryant, but they add Deontay Thompson on a one-year deal. Friday, Allen Hurns is going to be signing a two-year deal. They obviously have Terrence Williams there. He signed a four-year deal at $3.5 million. They have Cole Beasley, Ryan Switzer, Noah Brown, all under contract. Bryce Butler is going to be out with Thompson coming in. But Dez is set to make $12.5 million this year and count $16.5 million against the cap. If they cut him, they could save $8.5 million or $12.5 million, depending on the designation. That's a lot of money. The Cowboys were one of the least active teams in free agency. I'm talking about these deals that just happened, but those are really the first deals that they've gotten involved in. So I just wonder, you know, what's going to happen if they do cut him? Then what does that look like? Are they going to have the ability to go after anybody in free agency? Probably not. You know, they tried to go after Sammy Watkins, didn't work. He went to Kansas City. So is this them just rebuilding and going after some rookies in the draft?
You know, it was funny. I had a couple, you know, buddies that are Cowboys fans. I feel like everybody knows, you know, at least a few Cowboys fans who are just texting me. What are they doing? Are they unaware that free agency has begun?
And they don't have any money.
That's the thing. You have to have a plan. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like they didn't know that they didn't find out the day of that they didn't have any money. Now, if they're sat there comfortable with what they got, then so be it. But you know, I've already seen some people feel as if, you know, all the Cowboys have missed their window. I mean, it feels a little overreactionary. But for this team to have hit on a quarterback in the fourth round to be entering his third season and have one of the top five running backs in the whole league, to now people just being so low and to even offer the sentiment, maybe, you know, not that everybody is, but their window is closed. I mean, it's just crazy, kind of just the stigma currently around this Cowboys team. It's a lot different than what you'd thought it would be, I think.
Of the 32 teams, where would you guess the Cowboys rank for salary cap space for 2018 right now?
Considering what you said, I mean, they've got to be bottom five.
They are last.
Oh, gosh. They've,
right now, they have no money. $360,000.
Oh, that's my.
The next closest team is the Falcons, $5 million. Because they're paying the offensive linemen.
Yeah.
And Dez. That's really it. And they now then they franchise DeMarcus Lawrence. So there are a bunch of – look, we've said this before. There's four places that you put the money. QB, offensive tackle, pass rusher, corner. They've got money at two of those, but then they have a high-profile wide receiver.
But the thing is
cheap. To suggest the window is closed is just kind of throwing your hands up. Mm. That's bad team construction, because if you have a starting quarterback that's on a rookie deal,
exactly,
and a fourth round rookie deal, you gotta make hay while the sun shines.
Exactly.
Because that offensive line is nasty. Yes, their running back is fairly high paid, but that's all right. They're not all gonna be cheap running backs. I mean, they spent capital there. But it works out because the QB doesn't make any money relative to other QBs. I mean, Dak is probably 20 in the league, maybe probably lower. He's probably got to be in the top 5 to 7 paid quarterbacks in the whole league. So starting quarterbacks in the whole league. So, yeah, I mean, forget other guys, you know, Nick Foles and Chase Daniel and A.J. McCarron, throw those guys in over him too. So, the Eagles somehow worked their magic. They were like, I swear, we did this show 2 weeks ago. I was off last week, right? I was traveling. No.
2 weeks
last
ago,
week
you
I was
were
here.
Off.
2 weeks ago, I was traveling. But 2 weeks ago when we did this, or whatever, the Eagles were like $6 million over. Now they're $6 million under. They worked some sort of crazy magic, traded a couple of guys, signed Mike Wallace, and now they're $6 million under the cap. So,
you want to hear something crazy?
Yeah.
Dak is the 56th.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Highest paid quarterback for next year.
It is a
year.
Startling number.
He's not even making $1 million.
I know. He gets paid like 700 grand.
It's 725.
Yeah. So, let's see. Pretty close. Not bad. So, I mean, and it is obvious that other teams are strategizing to get a cheap quarterback, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's one or the other. Like, being the middle guy is terrible. The Eagles somehow won the Super Bowl with that situation. But their initial plan was like, we're drafting our rookie quarterback on the cheap in Wentz. They just got on a nice run there with Foles. But you don't want to be really in the middle. You want to be, all right, we got to pay Drew Brees. You know, we got to pay Kirk Cousins $28 million if we want to do this, or we got to draft somebody. And obviously some teams are shifting to drafting people. And they're going to try and ramp up quick because they've seen the success that the Jaguars have had because Bortles is on a rookie deal. Even if he plays unevenly, they could stockpile a whole bunch of defenders, right? And they made themselves a good team while the quarterback was cheap. And the teams like the Jets and the Browns and who else is drafting a quarterback up there? I'm just blanking around. The Jets and the Browns and the Bills and even the Cardinals. Like, those teams are going to have to scramble to try and build around that cheap quarterback quickly, right? You don't want to waste it while you have it. And the Cowboys have it right now, and they do appear to be wasting it. So where else can they spend money? I don't see how they're not going to cut Dez at this point. And their hands are completely tied. They can't sign anybody else.
Well, that's
if he doesn't want to take a pay cut, then they just have to release him.
The thing is, when they cut Dez, what is it that they do with that money? I mean, what's really left out there for them to do? It's almost as if it's too little, too late for this team to really be out there making. I mean, obviously, you know, the ability to free up, you know, $8 or $12 million is huge, but this feels like a decision that should have been made quite some time ago. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they're sat there and they want to see what they're able to land in the first couple of rounds and make decisions based off that. But, you know, I mean, you're going to go from a situation, regardless if Dez Bryant's a shell of himself, you know, at least you have someone that at least has to command some respect from opposing defenses. If Allen Hurns is now your number one, if some kid you draft on day two is your number two, and then you're going out there hoping that, you know, Cole Beasley can get back to, you know, what he was 2 years ago, and all of a sudden Switzer or Deontay Thompson take off, or Terrence Williams figures out football, you're seriously hurting yourself here. Especially when the offensive line isn't even what it once was. I mean, there are people, smart people, who are suggesting that this team draft interior offensive line for this upcoming draft in the first round. Now, I don't know if that's the best bet for this team, but that just lets you know that this isn't even a team. Like, they have, yes, they have a lot of these guys paid on that offensive line, but they're not secured five across like they were just 2 years ago. This is a team that has taken a huge drop from in just two seasons.
Yeah, and here's what they've done. They designated DeMarcus Lawrence as a franchise tag player. Then they re-signed defensive tackle Brian Price. They signed defensive tackle David Irving. They traded a fifth-round pick to Oakland for a fullback, Jamise Olawale from Oakland. Signed linebacker Joe Thomas to a two-year contract. Then they signed Thompson and Hurns that we already talked about. So that's it. That's the activity on their
good thing they got their fullback
resume right now. Yeah, so great. yeah, great. There's like seven of those guys left in the whole league. Sorry, my computer's frozen up. I was going to try and compare like what the Steelers have done because they've done nothing either, but because they're capped out, but I think you would say that the Steelers are a lot more set than the Cowboys are.
Significantly.
You know, they've got all these major pieces. You could make an argument, I could have, before last season, I thought the Steelers had the best roster in the NFL. I didn't say that they were necessarily going to win. I did actually have them in the Super Bowl last year because I thought they could pull it off. But after Shazier got hurt, that team was obviously different. And they might not have been as good as the Eagles or the Pats anyway, but they're in the mix, right? The loss to the Jaguars notwithstanding. So here's where the Steelers are at. I'm just trying to give you a sense of, you know, this is a team that is similarly capped out like the Cowboys. They released Mike Mitchell. That freed up $5 million. They released William Gay, a corner. They're trying to franchise tag Le'Veon Bell. They signed a fullback. They signed the kicker. They signed backup running back. They signed John Bostic to a two-year contract. They signed Morgan Burnett to a three-year contract and defensive tackle Daniel McCullers. So all of this stuff is just filling in where the Steelers need help. Mm-hmm. Morgan Burnett for Mike Mitchell, that's probably like saved them like a couple of million bucks or got them a couple of years back on a younger player. They're just filling in. The Cowboys are doing the same stuff, but they're not a team that's competing for championships. I know they went 13-3 a couple of years ago, but they lost their first playoff game, which was a home game to the Packers. So I was there, actually. Devastating loss for them. So anyway, I know I went on a little bit of a tangent there, but my point is that, as you said, I'm bolstering your point by saying they haven't done anything, and they're a team with holes still. So I think the only way they're going to get out from under it is to cut Dez Bryant, which is a bummer for people that are Dez Bryant fans, but really, I don't really see any other way to do it. You're going to commit $17 million cap hit to a guy that is obviously not getting it done in the way that he used to. So,
where would Dez,
topic number one.
You anywhere Dez could land? I don't.
Let me go to the cap numbers here.
Because, I mean, instantly, anytime a player who was won something and now needs a new spot, and I just automatically go, now he's going to go to the Patriots. I don't know if that's still how things work, and I don't know if the Patriots would be interested in Dez Bryant because he comes with a little, maybe more off-field baggage than they would like to handle.
They had Randy Moss.
Randy Moss was far more talented than Dez Bryant. Far more worth the heck.
But they also signed Ocho Cinco when he was a disaster. I mean, he caught 14 passes or something that whole season. The Pats have $12 million in cap space. Other teams with money out there, let's just say he commands $8 million. Let's just say that. He plays on like a $1 million, $10 million deal. Let's just give him that.
Okay.
He does a prove it deal to say and get back. Browns still have money, but they're committing a whole bunch to Jarvis Landry.
But they were in on they in on Terrell Pryor, the Browns? Like that could actually be a possibility.
Where did I see Terrell Pryor?
He landed with the Jets.
The Jets have who do they have? They have Robbie Anderson, Anunua, Pryor, and who am I missing? They signed somebody else.
Oh,
that's like not a bad receiving core. I'm just blanking at the moment. So many free agency signings. But there's a bunch of teams out here with money. The Colts have money. That would be sort of interesting to play with Andrew Luck. The Niners, the Titans, the Bears. The Bears aren't going to sign him. The Jets aren't going to sign him. Texans. That's actually kind of interesting, right? The Texans, but they have already a bunch of young wide receivers. They don't want to pay him that. So, yeah, there you go. I mean, there are teams out there with some money. Would anybody want to dedicate it to declining Dez Bryant? Remains to be seen. When we come back, we'll talk about JPP, the JPP trade, and what that does or does not mean. We're going to have to talk. When we come back, we're talking with Rich Sherminello. We'll talk a little bit more about the JPP trade and what that means for the Giants at number two after this. That's how I intended to start this hour, but the Dez Bryant conversation took off, and that's okay. Flexible show. Talk about a lot of stuff.
We move around. We make it work. But that's what happens when you start talking about Dez Bryant and the Cowboys situation. I mean, again, just to close on this point, it's just when you have the opportunity to have an incredibly cheap quarterback like you have with Dak Prescott, you should have one of the more talented rosters around it. And I don't think anybody feels like this is a roster, quarterback notwithstanding, that would be. Is it a top 10 roster in the NFL?
It is not. It is not a top 10 roster.
And you can't have that. And that's rough.
No, I agree. Well, there's only one guy to blame in Big D. He's the owner and the GM. We're going to come back. We're going to talk Rich Sherminello about NFL draft process, the defensive side of the ball, on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network right after this.
If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product.
We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Blute and Kevin Walsh. We're bringing in Rich Sherminello here in a minute. But before we do, obviously you can hit us up on Twitter. Somebody was asking me just on Twitter earlier about baseball talk. We're doing that in the third hour. Obviously tons and tons of drafts going on, but we'll talk about some strategy stuff and some players that you may want to sneak into your drafts before you draft this weekend. Hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. And the last thing I want to tell you is that there's no more important marker on the fantasy baseball calendar than draft day. So there's no more important move to make than to get the 2018 RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package. Get in-depth advice, rankings, and tips from the top ranker in all of fantasy sports, Jake Seeley. We're going to talk a little bit about his article in the next hour. So go inside the numbers with multiple-time FSWA award winner Tim McCullough. Fantasy Hall of Famer Scott the King Engel brings you his award-winning Insider Series from the MLB Beat. And 2017 Fantasy Baseball Champs Mike Florio and Joe Galina add to all the insights. Plus, this year's edition features a new cheat sheet generator and a Slack chat channel. So enter code FNTSY at checkout for a discount and make the ultimate move to win it all with the RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package. So, again, I promise we will talk baseball in the next hour, but for now, we're going to talk a little bit of the college draft scenario with Rich Sherminello. You can find him on Twitter at Rich Sherminello. That's CIRMINIELLO. He's director of college awards from the Maxwell Football Club, and he co-hosts right here on College Football Today. You can find it also on Dish, but he does it here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I'm going to be hosting some specials with him. We did a combine special a couple of weeks ago. We'll do one for the draft, post-free agency, pre-draft. We'll do some NFL draft coverage the night of. So, Rich, first of all, that was a mouthful, but thank you for joining me.
My pleasure. I have missed you guys. Kevin, how you doing today?
Doing great, Rich. Glad to get into the defensive side of the ball today.
Yeah, so. We obviously fixate either from a fantasy standpoint or just from a sex appeal standpoint on the Saquon Barkleys and all of the quarterbacks. But, there's some great defensive players available for the 32 NFL teams just like there are every year.
So I think the first thing I want to ask, and we've probably talked about this before, but Bradley Chubb has really become the consensus number one defensive player in this draft. I am a huge fan of Minkah Fitzpatrick. I think I've made that known, and I know you had a chance to see him recently at your awards dinner. Minkah, a New Jersey native, as are you, so you saw him recently down in Atlantic City. But Bradley Chubb, because pass rushers are so sought after, he is considered to be the number one guy in this draft. There's the Marcus Davenport discussions and others, but would you compare him favorably to Myles Garrett, who was the number one overall pick last year?
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, Mike. We did not rehearse this off air. That was exactly where I was going to go, was with a Myles Garrett comparison. And there's a possibility that at number four, the Browns could team up Garrett and Chubb, which would be interesting and a pretty prolific bookend. Different kinds of players. Myles Garrett, a lot longer, a lot leaner. Chubb is more of a low to the ground, center of gravity, low leverage type player. I think a better run defender as well. What I like about Bradley Chubb compared to Myles Garrett is, and I'm a big Myles Garrett fan, was when he was at Texas A&M, but there were times, at least in college, where he would take plays off. There wasn't that consistency, that motor play in and play out. And Bradley Chubb is the complete opposite of that. The reason why I love the kid so much and why I think he will be the top defensive player, although it's not a complete given. There are some defensive backs. You mentioned Minkah, Derwin James, Denzel Ward at Ohio State. I don't think he'll get outside of the top 10. But that motor of Bradley Chubb, that ability to bring it, play in and play out, is the reason why I think he's going to go very high in this draft.
Rich, let me keep it on with the edge rushers, because the guy that was supposed to be the top edge rusher at all the way in the beginning of the year was Arden Key. And it was a really iffy situation with him as a whole, and some people, he was battling through injuries and what have you. How do you view Arden Key?
Well, I think he's one of those lightning rod type players. Arden Key, I think when you look at the final year of a college player, I really evaluate that very closely because, there is a tendency to want to potentially avoid injury, tap the brakes a little bit, let's save myself for Sundays. And I kind of understand that because of the money that's involved. But Arden Key, when he knew last year was going to be his final year in Baton Rouge, really just did not show up. Had the rough off season, was away from the team, and then comes back in the summer not in great shape. That carried over into the season. So I would have concerns. There are major red flags. If I had to characterize Arden Key, Kevin, I would say he is the type of player that clearly he can flash. He has that speed. He has that length around the edge, can be one of the most dominant pass rushers in this draft, can be better, certainly, than Marcus Davenport, who I think will go higher out of UTSA. But are you going to get it consistently? Are there going to be off-field issues? Does he love the sport? Does he have a passion for it? That would be my concern. So the ability to, to have a couple of series where he's the best player on the field, absolutely. But throughout the course of the season, I'm worried, and I think that's why he slips into the second round of the draft.
So we have some other guys that have crept up into the top 10. I think Minkah Fitzpatrick, it's going to be a debate where he goes, but people are going to feel really good about his skill set. And somebody that we liked that has probably risen through the course of this pre-draft process is Roquan Smith, the inside linebacker out of Georgia. He ran a 4.51 40. He's 6'1", 236 pounds. So he's not unusually tall, but he's obviously extremely solid. And the speed doesn't just jump off the screen in a combine. He obviously plays pretty fast on the field and on tape.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. This, Mike. Kevin knows it. I mean, sometimes, straight line speed differs than football speed. That certainly applies to Roquan Smith. When you watch the tape of him, he gets to the ball very quickly, sideline to sideline speed. Talked with Kirby Smart, his Georgia head coach, back in February, and he said he can't remember, this goes back to the Alabama days, can't remember a player on defense that turn the corner as quickly as Roquan did in 2017. The light went on. He realized what was at stake. He was a galvanizing force in that team that nearly won a national championship. And, you know, what I like to do is the comparisons. You know, is Roquan the top linebacker taken? Is it Tremaine Edmonds out of Virginia Tech? Two very different players. Tremaine is long, has very big arms, can play outside linebacker, can play inside linebacker, tremendous pass rusher. But if you're looking to defend the run, if you want more of a traditional inside linebacker, then Roquan Smith is your guy.
Let me keep it there then, Rich, because those feel like the two guys that everybody is now going back and forth on, between whether it be Edmonds and Smith. Do you personally have a preference, and do you feel, though, as if perhaps a guy like Edmonds and the way he plays is maybe going to become more of the normal for what teams look for in their linebacker?
It's a great question, I don't mean to ride the fence here or take a Switzerland neutral stance. I think both linebackers are going to be very good NFL players, so I don't know if there's a wrong answer. But Kevin, you really staged it very well, because I think it comes down to what your preference is going to be. And I agree with where you were heading with the question, which is, you know, you need pass rushers in this league. You need somebody who could generate pressure from the outside. You need that explosive playmaker. And I think Tremaine Edmonds is that guy. I love Roquan. I think he'll be terrific in the NFL. Great kid off the field as well. But in terms of that explosive, game-changing talent, look at Tremaine Edmonds. Look at his body size. Look at what he accomplished last year in Blacksburg. Look at the fact that he's 19 years old. 19 years old. He's not even 20. So he'll continue to grow into that body. He is going to be an absolute behemoth in the next couple of years. So I think both are talented players for sure, and that'll show in the first round on April 26th. But in terms of the higher ceiling, I say give me Tremaine Edmonds. I think he's going to wind up being one of the top players drafted in this class.
And just to give you a sense of his stats, he ran a 4.54. I was just patting Roquan Smith on the back for a 4.51. At 236 pounds. He ran a 4.5 440 at 253 pounds.
Yep.
His production was amazingly consistent. 106 tackles, followed up by 109 tackles. 18.5 tackles for loss, followed up by 14. 4.5 sacks, followed up by 5.5. So for 2 years in a row, he was putting up the numbers on the field. So I think a big debate that's going to start to happen as we get a little bit closer to draft time is, you know, I'm just looking right now. I've been jumping around to different sites. I'm looking right now at Mel Kiper's big board. So he's not predicting where these guys will go. He's just trying to say how he slots these guys as potential NFL talents. And he's got Minkah Fitzpatrick, Derwin James, and Denzel Ward back to back to back. I've professed my love for Minkah Fitzpatrick enough, but how do you have these guys ranked?
Well, you know, I think for a while, and that's changing right now, Mike, Derwin James fell off of people's mindsets because he misses 2016. 2017, the entire Florida State program caved in. I think we forgot about everything in Tallahassee, so he was a little bit off the radar. But Derwin James is a unique individual, not just from a physical standpoint. I like the alpha males in the locker room, and that's what Derwin James is. He doesn't just lead by example. Love Minkah. Minkah's more of a quiet leader, more of a, you know, watch me and follow my lead. Derwin James will rally the troops. I like that. I compare him to one of his former teammates, Jalen Ramsey, now with the Jags, Cam Chancellor. He's that type of a talent. So big James fan. Love Minkah. Love his versatility. Can play him at safety. Can play him at corner. Again, great kid off the field. He'll be terrific in the community. But I think the best of the bunch might be Denzel Ward. I mean, I think if you want a lockdown corner, and that's the position on defense, you know, you need a pass rusher, need someone to neutralize the other guy's best receiver. That is Denzel Ward in this draft. And I think the gap between Ward and everyone else at corner is significant. And I think that's why his stock will continue to rise as we get closer to the draft, because the realization is, yeah, if I'm the Broncos and I need to replace an Aqib Talib, I need a corner, I need a lockdown guy, I better get him now, because after that, good corners, but I'm not sure if they're great corners, was disappointed. in the performance of Josh Jackson from Iowa. I think his stock has slipped a little bit. So Denzel Ward is big. He's physical. He's fast. He comes from that Ohio State program. So I think his stock will rise into the top five before we get to the 26th.
You know, Rich, you make a great point, right, that Ward's created this separation, and that's kind of what you always look for throughout, you know, obviously not only the games, but then, you know, when we get into the combine and all that stuff. I feel like for the defensive tackles, we haven't seen anybody really create that separation. There's still a lot of conversation, Vita Vea or De'Aaron Payne, but also Maurice Hurst has probably had the most interesting offseason so far for any player with the heart issue. Where are you kind of just on as far as Hurst goes, I guess, on-field and off-field with all of this stuff?
Yeah, let's start with on-field. Watched him very closely last year. I think, you know, oftentimes defensive tackles, you guys know this, unless you're in Ndamukong Suh at Nebraska, they tend to fall through the Aaron Donald at Pitt. They tend to fall through the cracks because the stats aren't always there. That certainly applies to someone like Vita Vea or De'Ron Payne. Harrison Phillips is an exception at Stanford. But I look at Maurice Hurst. If you watch him on film, his ability to bust through the gaps, to get off the ball quickly, just be too fast. I mean, there's almost, I tweeted the other day about John Randall. There is a little bit of John Randall in Maurice Hurst, just in his explosiveness and the energy that he brings to the field. So in terms of his on-field, I think he has all of the potential to be a dominant interior lineman, someone who can get into the backfield consistently. The heart situation, which Michigan knew about, and he was cleared in Ann Arbor, it's going to bear watching. And I think each individual team and their medical staff might take a slightly different stance. Obviously, it's going to impact where he's drafted, because now there's a medical issue, a potential looming medical issue. God forbid, you know, you draft him in the first or second round, and then all of a sudden he's no longer cleared to play football. So that's a concern. The player I'm not concerned about, but obviously, you know, how that heart condition impacts his draft stock is going to be something interesting to watch over the next 4 weeks.
You know, as we continue down, you know, just start to look at, like, you know, some value picks, maybe a little bit later in the first round. You're seeing some of the guys that Kevin just mentioned, Vita Vea and De'Ron Payne, Taven Bryan from Florida. Yeah. Jair Alexander is a cornerback from Louisville who's worked his way kind of into the top 20 or so. Your thoughts on him?
Well, it's an interesting one for me because I was pretty vocal about a year ago in saying that I thought he was slightly overrated. He was a flashy individual, has some tremendous dance moves on the field, which is never a bad thing. So he brings a lot of attention to himself, no shortage of confidence or swagger. I like the kid, but there was a lack of consistency in 2016 and in 2017. He tends to bite on pump fakes a little bit too often, so I wanted to see more consistency on the field last year at Louisville. Didn't see it, guys. Now, he's had one of the best pre-draft workouts, whether it was combine, all-star games, whatever case may be. He's been great. So I could see where his draft stock is rising, but I still need to see more. I still am a fan of Josh Jackson. I know he didn't run well, but his playmaking ability, his ball skills, his instincts, I still prefer that kind of a player than someone like Alexander, who's a little bit up and down for my taste.
Good stuff. That's Rich Ciarmiello. You can find him on Twitter at Rich Ciarmiello, Ciarmiello. He's the director of College Awards for the Maxwell Football Club. You find him here with me coming up in a couple of weeks. We'll be doing a draft special together, post-free agency, mock draft situation, me, Joe Lisi, a whole cast of characters. So, Rich, thanks for joining us this week.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.
I enjoyed it.
Thanks, Rich.
So we'll come back, we'll wrap up some NFL stuff, and it is a big draft weekend for baseball. I needed to be reminded of that by somebody on Twitter, but trust me, we're talking baseball in the next hour. NFL next. Mike and Kevin, we'll be back after this.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out, now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone, we promise. No weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's Fantasy Sports Today. That was Rich Sermonella. Good stuff out of Rich, as always. Just dropping some knowledge about the NFL defensive draft prospects. I'm learning. Sometimes I'm learning along with you. I know some of my stuff, but I need to rely on an expert to kind of dive deep and see what he thinks of those guys. But before we continue on the NFL talk and, again, baseball talk in the next hour, did you know that it takes only 1 minute to potentially save someone's life? No, seriously, just 1 minute. That's how long it takes to swab your cheeks and join the donor list with DKMS. There are currently over 900,000 registered donors in the U.S., and we need more. There's an American diagnosed every 3 minutes with blood cancer, and there can never be enough donors. For only $45, you can help DKMS register new bone marrow donors. DKMS donors save approximately 19 lives a day, and we want you to help save just one. So please, if you can, go to dkms.org/fantasy today. Schedule for the rest of the way. We're here until noon, and then.
So what we want to do is we're gonna get Mike back in here, but what we want to do is actually talk about that JPP trade and just kind of how it's affecting things at the top of the draft, because they moved on from JPP. Obviously, for a lot of Giants fans, that's a sentimental move, right? With part of one of their Super Bowl wins and kind of one of the last guys there. Obviously, Eli is still there, but as far as along the defensive line, there are people who've loved JPP for so long. Obviously, you know JPP, blah blah blah, all the stuff. He's gone now, and it's opening up to people to the idea, are they going to take Bradley Chubb at 2? And I'm really interested to see where Mike has landed on this, but I have a very strong stance on how I think the Giants are going to be approaching the second pick. Now, first, you have to acknowledge the report that has recently come out that says the Giants are not interested in any other quarterback other than Sam Darnold. Now, all of the reports suggest Sam Darnold is going 1 to the Browns. So that's obviously a real bummer for the Giants. If Darnold is off the board, that means that they don't like any of the other quarterbacks. Now, at the end of the day, when it comes to choosing your franchise quarterback, you should not force it. Now, the Giants have an opportunity here at 2 to really capitalize and you know, get someone that can take over for Eli. They're not supposed to be ever picking at this highest spot again, so it can make their future transition a lot easier. But again, forcing it is not worth it. If there's a gap between Darnold and Rosen, that's fine. But if you don't think that Rosen, Mayfield, Allen, Lamar Jackson, whomever it may be, are they don't have the chance or they don't fit what you want, then you don't force the draft. And that leads me to believe that since this what's pretty much come out is that they're not interested in anyone other than Darnold, then there's only one option for this team if they're not going to take quarterback, and it's for this team to trade back. I don't see how they sit there at 2 when you look at all of the options that they've had in terms of potential trades, when you see what it took the Jets from to get to 6-3 and take one of these position players of Saquon Barkley, Bradley Chubb, Quentin Nelson. I don't see how that's possible. Mike, for you, when you look at the Giants situation as a whole, I feel like it's pretty simple. It's quarterback or it's move back. Do you feel the same way or no?
I do. I do think that the guy that they really want the most based on what Gettleman likes is Quentin Nelson. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to soften on that because I don't know where they're going to end up. Like, I don't know that the Broncos really want to pay the price to move up. They could. I just don't know that they do. Look, Chris Canty set the world on fire. Chris Canty does a local show here, 98.7 New York, but he called into Wingo and Golic and Wingo, mm-hmm. whatever the show is, on ESPN, and he made a comment that he thinks the Giants are going to move out of that pick, but don't be surprised if they move up, meaning like King's Ransom to move up, which means one thing. The Giants really like Darnold.
Yeah. So you saw the report as well?
And I think Canty has inside info that the Giants love Darnold. Now, here's the reality. They're not getting him. I think it's locked in now. Browns taking Darnold. So then what? Your number one player is gone. I think you move out and take picks. I've thought all along that this is going to happen. Now I just feel vindicated. I don't get a lot right, But I got the Kirk Cousins thing right, and I'm going to pat myself on the back if the Giants trade out of this pick, because I think they should trade out. And I agree with what you just said. I only caught the tail end of it because I had a little connection issue. But I would trade out. Get what you can. Are the Broncos going to want to pay the price when they have Keenum there and still a developmental? I mean, look, signing Case Keenum means we're done with Paxton Lynch, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Right. I mean, he's still on the roster, so it's the only reason I asked the question. So they're done with him. But can you bring a developmental guy in here to be under Keenum?
Mm-hmm.
And are any of these guys developmental? Like, is Allen developmental and Lamar Jackson is, and but Darnold isn't and Rosen isn't? Like, rookies are just going to take lumps. Sometimes I think we make too much of it. Like, let's just put this guy on the sidelines because he's not ready. I think you throw DeShone Kizer out there when he's not ready. That's just a bad decision. And by the way, you're screwing up every other part of the team too. It's not fair to him. But I think some of these guys can go out there and just take lumps. Like, yeah, Darnold, ironically, the Browns are going to do it 2 years in a row. They're just going to throw a guy out there for 32 games in a row that may not be ready.
I don't think
the team may not
start.
Be ready. You think that's just Tyrod Taylor? But why? Why?
Because of what just happened with Kizer. That's why.
Well, it's a fair point, but it's the coach's fault more than anything. And Kizer isn't as good as Darnold, by the way.
That's fair, but I also don't I don't think that Darnold is a quarterback that fits the mold of doesn't need time to sit, at least in the eyes of how people are looking at him. I think there's actually a lot of things about the way he plays the quarterback position that people would like to actually take some time to work with. Like, he is maybe of all the quarterbacks the one that people talk the most about needing to refine mechanics with. So I actually don't know. In all honesty, in terms of all of these quarterbacks, I think Rosen and Baker are the two that are most likely to start day one.
Baker and Rosen. That's probably true. I agree with that. I think Rudolph could too, actually. But you may not have the upside with Rudolph that you have with some of the other guys. But so going back to our discussion, yeah, I think the Giants could trade out. Can Buffalo pay that ransom? I think they can. They got six picks in the first three rounds. I think they could pay that ransom. And they've obviously, you know, they're moving up to try to make another move. They're not all the way where they want to be, because what are they going to do? Sit at 10 and or where are they? 12 and 21 right now? 12 and 21. They're just going to sit there and like, I hope the fifth guy gets to us. That's not the way to attack it. It's almost like, you know, so we were on air when we broke the Jets news. I guess it was last week.
Right.
And Tony Cincotta, who's actually Tony Cincotta, is going to come on at 11:40 to talk with Kevin. I have an event that I need to attend, and I'll be late if I do the show right down to the last minute. So I'm going to take off for the last segment. I hope everybody out there listening is not mad at me. In any event, yeah, I'm sure. So, I lost my train of thought. Oh, but the Jets going to three doesn't guarantee them anything. That's the bad part. You said on air that's a good thing for the Giants, and I agreed. Because I think it just ramps up the price.
Mm-hmm.
But the Jets, very good chance. I'd put it more than 50% chance that Jets are getting the third quarterback in this draft. Because somebody's going to trade with the Giants.
I absolutely agree. I don't think there's any two ways about it. The first three picks are going to be quarterback. And that's still why I think that the first four picks could be quarterback. Because if you're the Browns, I mean, you've grabbed your guy. Again, and I don't think that Saquon Barkley is really in the range for them anymore. Like, I don't think that they want Saquon, rather, is the way to put that. I do think that Bradley Chubb,
Carlos Hyde of cheaper money.
Yeah, Rich Sherminell just mentioned it. I think that Bradley Chubb is actually the guy that this team wants to add. And I think that at four, that's fine to do it. But I wouldn't be surprised if there was a slight move. If the Dolphins, who, it's been vocal that they're interested in, and they're looking at these quarterbacks. They're working these quarterbacks out. If the first three quarterbacks happen to be in order, Darnold, then Allen, then Rosen, the Dolphins have had links to Baker Mayfield. And now that's a huge leap for the Browns to move back to 11. But at the end of the day, they could go back to 11 and have so many assets that they could get themselves back to 5 or 6. It's certainly in play. And also, if the Dolphins are making calls, then again, the Broncos might just have to make a one-spot jump to ensure that they're not outbid by the Dolphins, just like the Bears had to do with the Niners last year. So I really think that you're in a spot where you really could see, in some order, Darnold, Rosen, Allen, and Mayfield, the first four picks in this draft.
Possible. Absolutely possible. And the Saquon Barkley thing, it's probably going to frustrate some Browns fans that love Barkley and know how well he tested, but I actually don't think that he's in the cards for them anymore because of the move that they made. You know, they have Duke Johnson and Carlos Hyde there. That's a pretty good duo, and their combined salary will probably be less.
So you're coming to my side? Barkley. You think he falls to Tampa at 7 or what? What's the deal here, Mike?
I'm trying to get him higher than that, but it's starting to, after this Giants trade and the Jets trade nonsense, he's starting to fall, as to your point. Like, who really is going to go after him? Does Denver want him?
That would be, wouldn't be terrible, but it would be surprising.
The Colts are at 6.
Yeah.
They have a million holes.
That's putting it, honestly, that might be putting it kindly.
I mean, they need defense more than anybody. But would you pass on Saquon Barkley if you're them? Because you love Marlon Mack so much?
The thing is, they do need everything. Like, they need Barkley, they need Nelson, they need Chubb, they need Fitzpatrick, they need Derwin James.
They need Nelson. They need Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
They need McGlinchey. They need Orlando Brown. They need Colton Miller. They need a whole offensive line. They need – it's the worst roster, I think. If you were going all the way down the list, I think they've done a really bad job, and you know, I think their new GM knows that, and he's trying to make hay while the sun shines. That's why he's got some picks, you know. So in any event, the Bills got to move up. The Cardinals can move up. The Dolphins can move up.
You know what?
That's really probably all the teams that would move up: Dolphins, Bills, Cardinals.
Let me ask, though, because to
Denver.
Denver as well. To what Canty said, though, I mean, if you're the Giants and you are absolutely in love with Darnold, I mean, what could possibly be the price to get the Browns to move? Or are the Browns just going to sit there and say, absolutely not, this is our guy? I mean, again, if you're the Browns, you're insane if you trade back, if you love Darnold. You're insane. But it is the Browns, so I guess I can't rule it out.
It's a new GM. I'll have to say that, like, I think Sashi Brown has been unfairly criticized because they didn't give his plan an opportunity to play out. But I think he was very much a draft capital guy, and he would have been open to any offer.
Sam Hinkie.
We'll just keep taking picks. We'll keep doing it. The NBA is a little different, because you can really turn things around with one guy. You could make the argument that you could turn things around with one guy on a football team, but not as quickly, right? You draft Peyton Manning, it turns your franchise around, but it takes a few years to build everybody else around him. The NBA, like, you know, you draft LeBron James, you're good immediately. You know,
it helps.
I shouldn't ever use LeBron James as a comparison, as an example, because it's like, oh, cool, you picked the one all-time greatest athlete ever as an example. So it's not fair to do that, but because, like, right behind him was Darko and Carmelo and those other guys who maybe didn't turn around a franchise immediately. But in any event, I think they're locked in on Darnold, and I don't think they're going to really take any phone calls.
I agree that as long as they like him that much, they shouldn't. If the Giants, though, as this kind of offseason has unfolded, I actually don't think that them moving... We agree that Nelson is probably their most coveted prospect, but if the Bills are offering up, you know...
Chubb is an option now for the Giants, too.
But
they're
not
moving
at
to
two.
A 3-4.
Right, can we agree on that?
Yeah, but he's not at 2, but he is at 4.
No,
what does it matter?
If they take a position player at 2, that is an egregious job of evaluating the room temperature. Like,
I agree with
there's
that.
No plausible way that the talent of Chubb, pretty much any non-quarterback, is worth not taking whatever the package that the Bills would offer. There's just no, there's no argument for that. And that's,
I 100% agree. I've been saying this for a couple of months, so I 100% agree.
And I'm
not going to argue with it anymore, yeah, because we're on the same page on that one. I think we've proven that. I just found it funny that people are like, oh, JPP. Like, I think Adam Schefter is the one who put out the tweet, so people freaked out. Like, oh, JPP's out of there. Might mean Bradley Chubb. So it might mean that, but I think the Giants' phone lines are wide open, especially the Jets, especially as you said last week, the Jets really helped them out. Like, they set the market that there's two quarterbacks going in the top three picks. So if you have a guy that you like after Darnold, then you're going to have to trade to the Giants to get him.
I'm going to keep trying to get you on my side that there's going to be six QBs gone in the first round. If we get four, if it's four for the first four, then do you think we get six?
I'll even extend it to if there's four out of the first five players are QBs, I think, yeah, we have a shot at six. I don't think Rudolph's going to make it in there. I think Lamar could.
So right now, if Rudolph
made it in and Lamar didn't, yeah, I think it's five. I think somebody's going to take a shot on Rudolph or Jackson. Mm-hmm. I think more likely Jackson than Rudolph. But some others are saying, and it's a fair point, why, if you're going to take Rudolph, Mason Rudolph, at the end of the first, at the beginning of the second,
right,
why not trade up and take him to the end of the first to get the extra year of control under a rookie deal, which is what the Jags are. You know, the Jags have had this nimble year with Blake Bortles to deal with. We'll come back. I'll put a bow on that, and then we're going to talk baseball. It's a big draft week, and we're going to talk baseball in the second hour. It's Mike Blute and Kevin Walsh on Fantasy Sports Today. We're back right after this.